You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Just 2 days away from the 2021 NFL schedule release for the first time, 17 regular season games, meaning we get an extra week of action. We'll know all the details come Wednesday, but we do know there are some incredible matchups coming your way, including this one, Buccaneers and Tom Brady facing off against his old Patriots team. Get your popcorn ready for that as we welcome you here to NFL Live. We've got Mina Kimes, we've got Ryan Clark and Field Yates today. Here's what you need to know about the 2021 schedule. This one's huge. Of course, the league adding on to the 16-game schedule that was in place since 1978, but the regular season will still kick off around the same time this year, September 9th, to be exact. But that extra game will push the regular season back a bit, with Week 18 falling on January 9th, only a week later than before, though, as teams will still have just one bye week. The Pro Bowl, usually played in January, that will now be adjusted to February 6th. And this year's game being played at Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. That means the Super Bowl Sunday will fall on February 13th, day before Valentine's Day, easily the latest into a calendar year that a Super Bowl has been played. Don't worry about the snow, though, because this one's going to be down at SoFi Stadium in L.A. It'll be really nice and balmy at that point. All right, so a developing story today. We'll get more on the schedule release, but we also begin with Tim Tebow. Apparently, he is likely to sign with the Jaguars as a tight end. Of course, last time he played in the NFL was 8 years, 4 months, and 10 days ago. Tebow won two national championships and a Heisman Trophy with now Jaguars head coach Urban Meyer. He, of course, was then drafted 25th overall by the Broncos, going 8-6 as their starter before being traded to the Jets for a fourth and sixth round pick after just two seasons. He bounced around, also spent some time with the Patriots and Eagles, but didn't start again in the NFL. Instead, went on to play four seasons of minor league baseball with the Mets organization from 2016 to 2019. So now here we are, Tim Tebow potentially getting another chance in the NFL. Field, what more can you tell us about this situation?
Yeah, Laura, you could argue that this situation or idea was hatched about 15 or maybe even more years ago when Urban Meyer, the now Jaguars head coach, was the head coach at Florida recruiting Tim Tebow, who, of course, is from the Jacksonville area. And obviously that was the start of a friendship and a relationship that has lasted over a decade and a half now. But more recently, this idea was hatched prior to the draft, as we learned through Shefty that just before the draft, the Jaguars were planning this workout for Tim Tebow as a tight end. And he had one avenue back into the NFL at the age of 33 and after, you know, an unusual but notable minor league baseball career. And that was if Urban Meyer got an NFL head coaching job. And this was the only path, and it happens to be a path that came about in 2021. So here we are. Who would have thought that we'd be discussing Tim Tebow in the NFL over 3,000 days since he last played in an NFL game?
Well, we shouldn't be discussing Tim Tebow in the NFL right now unless we're talking about ways that he's covering it, but that's different. And I'm not here. I'm not going to make jokes about that. Listen, if somebody would give me opportunity to do things that I may not deserve or may not be for me, I would still do them if I wanted to. But this is about Urban Meyer. This is about Urban Meyer and his friendships and his relationships and the way that that relates to him doing his job. Think about his hiring of Chris Doe early on in his tenure, right? A guy that had been fired from Iowa for harassment, for mistreatment for racist accusations against some of the players there at that school. Urban Meyer hires him not because he thinks he's necessarily best for the job or he thinks he's overcome some of those things that got him released from Iowa, but because he knew him. Right? Because in knowing him, he felt like he was a better man than some of the reports that we had heard. And Urban Meyer knowing him was enough. Just like Urban Meyer knowing Tim Tebow is enough. If I'm not mistaken, and I could be wrong here, I don't think the other 31 teams allow Tim Tebow to work out as a tight end. I think less teams than the 31 teams that wouldn't allow Tim Tebow to work out would actually sign Tim Tebow. But Urban Meyer says, you know what? I know him. We have a relationship. That's my friend. friend, I'm in a position of power, and that's enough. And so now, if I'm in that locker room, if I'm a veteran, or if I'm a young safety, or if I'm a player on this team at all, I understand that us winning helps me get money. I play well, we win, I get money. We can't win when we're hiring our friends. I know a lot of good players and a lot of good people that refuse to let the dream go. The difference is the dream lets them go because they don't have friends that are hired to be the head coaches of teams. And so if I'm sitting in that locker room and I say, the best thing for me is for the Jacksonville Jaguars to be great, to have a head coach that puts the team above himself. This head coach ain't doing that. In the way that he hired his strength coach or his assistant, he wasn't doing that. And in the way that he's trying to find his new tight end, he isn't doing that. And as for me, if I'm a player in that locker room, that is not good for my career because this is my business. He's making it personal, and not personal in the way where we're going to pay you if you play well. Personal that if you're my friend, over qualifications, I'm willing to hire you. And that's an issue for me.
I'm going to try to look at this from a football perspective because tight end was a position the Jags really needed to address going into this offseason. When I was looking at the roster and the holes, that was something that jumped out to me, and they passed on the tight ends. Granted, half of them went to New England, but Jared Cook signed with the Chargers for $6 million. He would have been a great fit. They waited in the draft until the fifth round, so it was still an area of need for this offense, and frankly, it remains an area of need. Like, I don't know if Tim Tebow can play tight end in the year 2021, but I do know this. He has not played a snap in a regular season game since 2012. For point of reference, the number one song in America in 2012 was Godier, somebody that I used to know, which, incidentally, to Ryan's point, is why Tim Tebow has this job, because yes, he's somebody that Urban Meyer used to know. I've heard the argument that he's being brought in for leadership. I would raise the question, why not as a coach then, right, where you're not taking a roster spot? Yeah. And look, Tim Tebow could prove us all wrong. He could be awesome at tight end at the age of 33, playing the position in the NFL for the first time. That would be wonderful, but all we have to work on is what we know, and what we know is nothing.
Mina, just to further your point of reference for that last NFL game that Tebow played in, December 30th, 2012, Trevor Lawrence was actually a seventh grader then, playing for the Cartersville Middle School Purple Hurricanes. One thing I'd like to point out before we head to break, you guys, is that I do think it's important to note that Tim spent his entire life in Jacksonville, basically. He grew up there, you know, certainly was a Jaguars fan, went to Florida. There is an element here where he is an exciting person there for Jaguars fans. I do think that's worth at least putting out on the table as part of the reasoning behind some of this.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
So the Colts looking for O-line help. Just reached a one-year deal with left tackle Eric Fisher, a source telling Adam Schefter the deal worth up to $9.4 million. And, of course, Indy needed a left tackle after Anthony Costanzo retired in January. Spoke with ESPN's injury expert Stefania Bell today. She said in recent years, people coming off Achilles injuries, which is exactly what they're dealing with Fisher, have actually been able to return within a 6 to 9 month time frame without complications. More on that in a moment, because that timeline is really, really important. So, of course, now you're looking at Carson Wentz liking this move, considering he was sacked a league-high 50 times despite playing in only 12 games with the Eagles this last season. He joined the Colts offense that had the second lowest sack rate in the league last year, protecting Phillip Rivers. Keep in mind, though, teams didn't test him too much, as Indy faced the sixth lowest blitz rate in the league. That might change with Wentz taking over under center. Field, a little more context again on the injury perspective from Stefania Bell on this. I mentioned that guys are coming back within that 6 to 9 month time frame. Part of the reason is
The surgery was done by Dr. Robert Anderson, and he's basically pioneered a surgical technique with Achilles injuries that's helped this. And basically, it's a smaller incision, less risk of infection, better wound healing. So the timeline here looks favorable, but if you think about this and the way that the Colts are approaching it, give us some context on what this timeline in your mind really looks like.
Yeah, Laura, so first of all, if you're not following along with Stefania Bell's injury analysis, you might as well not pay attention to injury analysis at all. She is the best in the business, no question about that. For the Colts, there is a little bit of a fine line here, though. You're right. The players have made returns within within that 6 to 9 month timeline. That being said, Eric Fisher is in his early 30s now. Of course, he was the first overall pick in the 2013 NFL draft. He's a big-bodied human, right? He plays left tackle for a living. And let's just look back before we look forward. The Chiefs, understanding their offensive line issues, knew that Eric Fisher was uncertain to begin the season, which is part of the reason why they moved off or on from Eric Fisher and eventually traded for Orlando Brown Jr. But with the Colts, after the draft had passed and they did not have an obvious solution on their roster, they finally strike a deal with Eric Fisher. And Laura, the contract details will be really telling because it's worth up to $9.4 million. But you'd imagine the Colts, who can afford to be patient a little bit on this one because they signed Sam Tevy, probably incorporated plenty of per-game roster bonuses and incentives for Eric Fisher to make that full $9.4 million.
Yeah, one more note from Stefania. The Colts are clearly comfortable with managing guys coming off of post-Achilles injuries. Marlon Mack tore his Achilles last season. He signed a one-year deal with the Colts in free agency. Also, they drafted Deo Odangbo in the second round. That's the Vanderbilt DN who tore his Achilles in January. That was not long before Fisher. So, Ryan, how do you think this team, these Colts, actually rank in the AFC South considering all of this?
I think they're the best team. And, you know, I know my homie, Mina Kimes, is going to come on here after, and she's going to do what she normally does because y'all set her up, and she's all ready to attack me. But I think that this is the best team in the AFC South. Even going back to last year, when you look at the way that they played defensively, now you had a rusher in the first round with Michigan's pay, and you think about what you're going to do offensively, you're going to run the football led by Jonathan Taylor. We're not asking Carson Wentz to come out and be great every game. We're asking Carson Wentz to be great in moments to protect the football throughout the game, and when we need some of that athletic stuff, when we need some of that number two overall draft pick stuff, you bring that out. This team is going to be led by Darius Leonard, by Kenny Moore, by DeForest Buckner. Those are going to be the guys that lead this team. Carson Wentz is going to have to make plays when called upon, and Frank Wright has to control that. Frank Wright has to put him in the best positions, and I believe that he will. At the end of this season, we're going to look up at the AFC South and say, remember what RC said in the offseason on a beautiful May day when the biggest news was Tim Tebow signing to the Jacksonville Jaguars? It's going to be that the AFC South was won by the Indianapolis Colts.
Wow, RC. I'm going to stop telling you my opinions before the show because you're trying to 8 Mile me and anticipate my hate before I get the chance to share it with the world.
Something they don't know what? About me, Papa Doc.
Mom Spaghetti, I'm gonna actually say something that maybe you didn't expect, which is that I agree with you. I think the Colts are going to win the AFC South because I think the AFC South is bad. I just don't think that the Colts are legitimate contenders along with the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Browns, the Bills in the AFC, largely because when I look at this offense, I don't see where they got better. Like, we're talking about the Eric Fisher signing, and if he can come back earlier rather than later, that's going to be huge after the retirement of Anthony Costanzo at left tackle. But, man, until he comes back, that is a problem for an offensive line, and that's critical because the number one reason why Carson Wentz struggled at the end of his tenure in Philadelphia was because of pressure, was because of all the injuries along that offensive line. Now you're asking him to come to a new team and resuscitate his career behind a line that, yes, is better, but is still missing a left tackle at the beginning of the season. They also didn't really improve at the skill players. They brought back T.Y. Hilton. I thought they would draft a wide receiver higher or go out and sign one in free agency. They didn't. So, again, the Colts are a good team. This is a really good organization with great coaches. But when I look at the depth chart on offense, I don't feel that much better than I did last year.
You guys, any more 8 Mile lyrics to get off our chest before we move on?
Anybody? I feel the pressure now. I'm really feeling the pressure.
Wow. Okay, I gave you the opportunity. So if any more pop up in the show, I'm mad at all of you. All right, Eric Fisher's off the market. But Field, let's read and react to some other free agents still waiting to sign. Let's start with Richard Sherman.
Yeah, that's right, Laura, who's been linked to a few teams, the Raiders, the Saints, the 49ers, and even his old flame, the Seahawks. But Richard Sherman, probably the most notable name that remains a free agent on the market, a guy who's going to bring competitiveness, he's going to bring leadership, and this dude can still play as well. He showed it during the 2019 season in particular.
Yeah, listen, for me, I want to see Richard Sherman go back to San Francisco. I know D'Amico Ryan has taken over for the departed D.C. there, Robert Salah, but I think that Richard Sherman is the leadership that they need, especially if you go to a young Trey Lance. Now you have somebody to get that defense moving. You'll have the pass rush back with some of those injured pass rushers return, and Richard Sherman is the key to the back end.
Another Seahawk, this one who has never left Seattle, is K.J. Wright, who's still available, Laura, a guy who's been a heart and soul player for them on defense for close to a decade now. Not many linebackers, I don't think there are any, as a matter of fact, that are out there that are available right now that are better, but the fact that he hasn't yet found a deal suggests perhaps a return to Seattle makes some sense.
I agree that a return to Seattle makes a lot of sense for K.J. Wright, who in his early 30s is coming off of one of, if not the best season of his career after switching to Sam linebacker in that Seahawks defense. Now, I would have picked Dallas before the draft, but they ended up taking Micah Parsons because the linebacker was a need for them. Seattle now at this point, a reunion makes too much sense.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Bears traded up to get their man. And with the draft in the rearview mirror, some key position battles are starting to rise to the surface across the NFL. RC, what are you watching?
To see how things shake out in Chicago with Justin Fields and Andy Dalton. I know how they should shake out. Justin Fields should be the day one starter. If I'm Matt Nagy, if I'm Ryan Pace, this has to work. I moved up to draft those traits. Now those traits have to turn into production on the field. We need to make the playoffs, and Justin Fields is the guy for that, not Andy Dalton.
All right, we talked about the Jaguars tight ends earlier in the show. Now let's talk about the running backs. I was surprised when Jacksonville took Travis Etienne in the first round, not because he's not a first-round talent, but because they already had James Robinson, who was excellent next year. And frankly, yeah. I'm not sure how these snaps are going to shake out. I think fantasy owners will be very curious to know as well. Ooh. Something Jacksonville will have to figure out early on, how best to deploy these two weapons.
I'm keeping an eye on New England, of course, where Cam Newton is the incumbent starter. Mac Jones, who waited so long in the draft room, his palms were sweaty last Thursday night, going drafted 15th overall. This two obviously starts to be a little bit different. I couldn't help myself there. But yes, I can't wait to see what happens in New England with Mac and Cam.
I mean,
we can talk more serious football if we need to right now.
Field, the fact that you turned slightly red, did anyone else notice that? As you delivered the 8 Mile lyric is my favorite thing that's ever happened on this show today. Perhaps Mac Jones can help open the field again in New England as they faced the fourth most average defenders in the box last season, according to Next Gen Stats. With Alabama last year, Mac Jones completed over 80% of his attempts outside the numbers for 15 touchdowns, just one interception. On the other hand, past quarterbacks posted a second worst QBR throwing outside the numbers last year, ahead of only the Jets. All right, so numbers tell one side of the story, but RC, do you think this will be an actual battle between Cam Newton and Mac Jones for that starting job in New England?
I absolutely do. And I think it'll be a battle of offenses that are closely related in scheme and strategy. This won't be like they have to be two different worlds. If you look at what Mac Jones was able to do, he was throwing and playing in a very college-like system. I feel like every time we speak about him, we speak about him like he's MVP-ready Matt Ryan or he's 2007 Tom Brady that he can process. And all he did was get under center, drop back without even turning his shoulders, just backpedaling like Dan Marino, and fire the ball all over to the marks. That's not what we saw. We saw the play action. We saw Jalen Waddle. We saw Devontae Smith. There was Najee Harris. He was clearly playing on the best team on the field, but they still mixed in those RPOs and those options that gave him easy reads. And so I think that this is going to be a closely contested competition. I believe that Cam Newton truly is the leader at this point, and we're going to have to see Mac Jones progress before he becomes the quarterback of the New England Patriots.
Man, Ryan, you're so right. There is this notion that because the Patriots drafted, you know, a quarterback known for his accuracy and his timing, they're going to run it back to the mid-2000s like Ben Affleck and J-Lo, but he's not Tom Brady 2.0 because nobody's Tom Brady 2.0. I want to be clear. No one is, right? And they can't just slot him into the same offense. They got to build an offense around Mac Jones. And as RC said, that offense is going to look a little bit more like what he did at Alabama. RPO has become like a dirty word for some reason. It works. If he was good at it in college, and part of the reason he was good at it was the system, the weapons he had, but it was also his decision-making and accuracy, they should implement more RPOs in the Patriots' offense when Mac Jones becomes a starter. Now, notice I said when, because, again, I agree with Ryan. There's no guarantee he's going to be the starter day one. He's going to be the starter at some point. They drafted him 15th overall, but there's no pressure in New England to rush him out immediately.
And in some ways, guys, it actually might be a good thing for the Patriots if Mac Jones isn't the starter right away, because that means that Cam Newton staved him off in the competition. And obviously, worst case scenario for the Patriots is that Cam Newton doesn't improve from the player he was in the second half of last season, and that Mac Jones simply isn't good enough to win the job over an unimproved Cam Newton. But if Cam shows marked improvement, great. He's still got a very manageable contract for this year. But if Mac Jones wins this job right away, we always talk about how the greatest advantage from a roster construction standpoint that a team can have is an established rookie presence or a very good rookie quarterback because of the rookie contract. But how about this, a step further? Mac Jones being picked 15th overall for the next 4 years is going to make less than $4 million per season. You juxtapose that against guys near the top of the draft. Trey Lance, who went third, who many people thought Mac Jones could have gone third. Trey Lance is going to make over close to $8.5 million a year for the next four seasons. And obviously, Trey Lance is a superior prospect in many people's eyes, and it's still a great bargain. But if Mac takes this job and wins it early, the Patriots obviously have a roster advantage that will help offset how aggressive they were in free agency this year when basically half the league sat out and the Patriots signed everybody available.
It's such important context. It just makes you think, oh, my goodness, Bill Belichick controls everything. He got this guy to fall to 15 so that he could get him at a cheaper price. It's unbelievable.
It's a conspiracy, Laura.
Yeah, what's going on with that? Guys, one thing, too, I want to point out when it comes to Mac Jones and quarterback battles, anybody following Alabama last year thought for sure Bryce Young, the freshman, was going to be the quarterback. And everyone there said Mac Jones ripped that job right out of his hands. You can look at that two ways because it means that he had to beat out the freshman who will be the starter this year. But also it does show what Mac Jones can do in a quarterback battle when everyone's doubting him. So we'll see how that turns out.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's go. Cannot wait for this. Wednesday, we find out when these games happen. But what is the reunion we're most looking forward to? Reunion games, RC. Start us off.
Listen, I'm looking forward to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the New England Patriots. Tampa Tom was rocking last year. They made him king, and we are moving toward a new world order. What is Bill Belichick going to do? Is he going to have a defense that can stop Tom and all those weapons? Is Tom going to show us that he was truly the Patriot way? I am so excited to see this. The gift from God is the new schedule for the 2021 season.
Wow.
Love it, RC. One of the best picks out there, of course. I'm going to go with the Ravens playing the Chiefs. And the reason why is that these two teams made a rare trade. Arguably two of the top three, maybe four teams in the AFC. You know, Orlando Brown Jr. gets traded from Baltimore to Kansas City, filling their biggest hole. These teams might meet once at some point between September and December and then meet again in January. Can't wait to watch this matchup of two of the AFC's powerhouses.
That's a good one, too. But an even better one, in my opinion, is the Sam Darnold revenge game, because the Jets made a big bet in Zach Wilson being better than their earlier first-round pick at QB, and now Sam has the chance to prove them wrong with a better cast of characters. I will be watching this with much more excitement than I would have guessed a few months ago if you'd told me I'd be watching a Jets-Panthers game.
Are they going to be having Sam Darnold draw on the sidelines? I'm just kidding. He'll be playing in the game, hopefully. All right, this is mine, you guys. How about the Rams and the Lions? Of course, they traded quarterbacks earlier this year, sending Matthew Stafford to L.A., Jared Goff to Detroit. And there's so many elements of this that are fascinating, maybe playoff implications, at least for the Rams. But Rams head coach Sean McVay addressed the changes the team is making following the move to grab Stafford at quarterback.
It all starts with the quarterback. And so, you know, our offense is going to have him in mind with everything that we do first and foremost. And so, you know, you're going to see some stuff that's reflected in a lot of the success that he's had in Detroit. We would be silly not to implement these things. And there's a lot of concept carryover.
I mean, that makes a ton of sense, right? Like, how many times are we going to offensive coordinators and coaches? Like, come on, if you got a quarterback who does this well, that's what your offense should look like. But, RC, how different does Stafford and this trade make the Rams?
My first question is, how different does Sean McVay talk about Matthew Stafford than he was Jared Goff toward the end of last season? Did you hear the excitement in his voice? Right. Wasn't it like one was Wally World and the other was Disney World? It was a totally different thing from Sean McVay. And you heard what he said. He wants to bring some of those things that we've seen Matthew Stafford do extremely well in Detroit. We know what type of arm talent he has. We know what type of player he is. But to me, the perfect marriage isn't just sitting on what used to work for Matthew Stafford in Detroit. It's marrying some of these things, some of the principles, some of the concepts that actually made Jared Goff good for us. Spill. Give Matthew Stafford that space. Give him that time. Give him that run game. Allow him to protect himself with the play action and then watch that arm talent work. Sean McVay, listen, let's not do everything to make Matthew Stafford feel comfortable. Let's do everything to make him great, to make this trade worth it. You aren't drafting in the first round for a very long time. It seemed to work out with Jalen Ramsey. Now make sure it works out with Matthew Stafford.
Man, the NFC West is just stacked. And you look at all these moves that the teams in the division are making, it makes you try to figure out, like, who is the best team in one of the better divisions in football next year? Phil, do you think the Rams are the best team in the division?
I do, Lauren. It starts with this premise. The best unit of any of the four teams in the division is the Rams' defense, which, of course, they're going to have to overcome some changes in the secondary. John Johnson and Troy Hill are both now Cleveland Browns. But one thing that Rams GM Les Snead has shown himself very capable of doing in recent years is excellent work around the margins, finding guys that people aren't talking about in the third round, in the fifth round, as undrafted free agents, as waiver claims, and turning them into really good players in their scheme. Darius Williams, a cornerback, who's been a great story of development. You couple that defense with what we think will be an improved offense. After all, you did make a notable trade this offseason for Matthew Stafford. I think the Rams are the favorites going into this year, but this is the toughest division in football, top to bottom.
Yeah, Field, I agree with your praise of the Rams organization finding talent around the margins, because they've had to. This is an extremely top-heavy roster. They've invested so much in stars like Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey, and now Matt Stafford, because you're counting the dead money from Goff, too. And as a result of that, they don't have a lot of depth at certain positions. Frankly, I was a little surprised that in this draft class, they didn't have a lot of picks. They didn't invest in the offensive line. They took Tutu Atwell, a deep threat wide receiver, which makes sense with Matt Stafford. But over the last 2 years, the only offensive lineman they've taken has been in the seventh round. They are really counting on their starters there. Austin Blythe, who was a center, is gone. Brian Allen is a fourth rounder. They've got him penciled in starting. But if one of those players goes down, there is really not a lot of options for the Rams on that offensive line. And I think that's where this team, which I agree with you, is the best in the division, that's where they'll get in trouble. It's not with the existing roster. It becomes a question of, well, what happens if one of your starters goes down?
No, you're absolutely right, Mina. I mean, let's just go back to the playoffs last year, and it wasn't that Aaron Donald wasn't on the field. He was there, but he was compromised, and it totally changed what this defense looked like. And so when you have these type of stars, but you don't necessarily continue to build all the auxiliary pieces around them, if they aren't out there, if they aren't 100%, if they can't be great, you can find yourself in some troubles. And so the Rams better make sure these guys are healthy and also allowing them to play at their best.
Yeah, okay, so Mina thinks the Rams the best in the NFC West right now. Field thinks that. Ryan, quickly, you agree? Is it the Rams at the top?
Yes, yes, 100%. They're the best, but the margin for error is extremely slim.
Ryan, remember a couple years ago when you got on the Rams and it was like, you know, you were busting pies on TV and doing all kinds of things? I hope that happens again this year. Let's see if we can make that happen.
It was a great time.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Dolphins made it very clear they were drafting for Tua Tagovailoa and building around him. For now, they got wide receiver Jalen Waddle to help stretch the field. Jalen Phillips, a talented linebacker. Safety Javon Holland to further fortify the defense. Offensive tackle Liam Eichenberg in the draft, just to name a few. And keep in mind, Miami did sign Will Fuller to a one-year $9.6 million deal in free agency as well. Tua really did struggle throwing to his wide receivers last season, completing less than 62% of his attempts for a league low 6.2 yards per throw. Brian Flores spoke recently about the need for improvement offensively with a focus on his young quarterback. Here's what he said. If they're putting all the work in, I expect him to improve, get better, to perform better, and Tua is obviously at the top of that list. He continued, last year's situation, we've talked about this numerous times, if he had started the season, we wouldn't have pulled him. We put him in. We're in a playoff chase. At that point, it's, hey, we got to do whatever we got to do to try to win. But no, my confidence wasn't shaken in him. Again, Flores saying, my confidence not shaken in Tua. Listen, it's a small sample size, and these expectations are high because the guy was picked 5 overall in last year's draft. But let's turn to this year. RC, what are the expectations for Tua this season?
The expectations are improvement, but there will be improvement by fire. And he didn't necessarily get that last year. He didn't get to fight through some of the adversity of the Denver Bronco game or other games like the Las Vegas Raiders where the games were tight. They put Ryan Fitzpatrick in there because I guess they were in YOLO moments. But Tua Tagovailoa needs to learn from those. He needs to have those with his professional teammates down in Miami. We saw it against Georgia. We saw it against LSU in his last year. But we didn't get to see those type of growths on the field right in front of us, and he needs those. And so I think this team may have to take a step back as he continues to try to ascend. He needs to show the Miami Dolphins something this year, because if he doesn't and they're moving into year three, they're going to start to have to get closer to making a decision. And if he hasn't shown them he's their franchise guy, I don't think he'll like the decision that Brian Flores has to make.
Yeah, I agree with you, Ryan. I also think something that got a little bit overlooked with Tua in Miami in that small sample size was he wasn't really playing with world beaters in a lot of those games. The skill players around him, there were injuries, and you know, it was by no means a top unit. They went out and they tried to address that this offseason with the addition of Fuller, taking Waddle early in the draft, Hunter Long. I love that they built around Tua and they showed him, you're the guy, we are invested in you. I have mixed feelings, however, about a couple of the things Miami did, one of which was the offensive line was an issue last year. I don't think they truly addressed it. I did like the Liam Eikenberg pick in the draft, but I still have questions around that group. And then also, and this is a storyline that's kind of flown under the radar, they replaced Chan Gailey, the offensive coordinator, with co-offensive coordinators, George Godsey and Eric Studeville. And that is a very unusual setup in the NFL. It's something you see a lot in college, or maybe you'll see a run and pass game coordinator. But I was trying to think the last time I saw that in the league, and Kansas City comes to mind, but that was under an offensive coach and Andy Reid. Brian Flores is a defensive coach. So while I'm not saying it was the right or wrong decision, it is unusual, and I'll be curious to see how that plays out in Miami.
Yeah, it's a good point, Mina. For what it's worth, he did deal with different offensive coordinators a few times in college, because at Alabama, it's like everyone goes there, they coach for a little bit, then they get the next job under Nick Saban. So Lane Kiffin, Brian Dable, Dan Enos, just to name a few. Maybe he is at least familiar with making those switches. Field, we have been talking about potential AFC landing spots for Aaron Rodgers. So let's just have a little fun here. What's the likelihood of Aaron Rodgers going to Miami?
Yeah, I'd say right now, Laura, the likelihood is no likelihood whatsoever, right? But if the Packers ever change their stance on trading Aaron Rodgers, let's make something very clear. What the Packers would want is not your overpaid veteran players. It's not your young quarterback. It's your draft picks. They want draft picks, which are cost-controlled assets in the future. This is a team that's basically maxed out on cap space for this year. They don't have the wiggle room to bring aboard the guys who make a lot of money. The Dolphins, as we know, as a result of the trade with the 49ers, have an extra draft pick now. They obviously used one of their extra firsts to move back up to take Jalen Waddle, but they have extra draft capital. And what I think makes Miami a hypothetically interesting team is that one thing we've learned about them is that they're not afraid to undo things really quickly. Last year, four players they acquired, Shaq Lawson, Kyle Van Noy, Jordan Howard, also Eric Flowers, guys whose contracts at max value worth like $150 million combined, all of them were gone within a year. The Dolphins are not afraid to undo things quickly, and if the pressure gets to Tua or he doesn't make that huge jump this year, then I think people are going to speculate upon Miami being in the quarterback market next offseason.
Ryan, what do you think?
Yeah, and for anyone at home who is a Dolphins fan is insulted that we would dare to suggest Aaron Rodgers would be an option for the Dolphins. That's every team, pretty much, in the NFL, except for like four. Your team would be upgrading at quarterback if they traded for Aaron Rodgers. So chill. It's not too a shade to say that it's something they should consider. That said, I think Field made an important point, which is the Packers don't need a young quarterback. So a trade with Miami doesn't make as much sense as Miami trading with, say, Houston, where if they had traded Deshaun Watson, as was rumored, that would have made sense for them to acquire Tua. And that's why I continue to go back to Denver as the best option for a Packers trade, because they have pieces and draft picks to give away. And for them, it's not about trading a young quarterback to Green Bay.
Yeah, at the risk of potentially throwing Tua shade, which I'm not doing, I am thinking about the fact that we were apparently doing this show in 2007 or like 2008 because Tim Tebow is going to come back and play football in the NFL. We got Eminem lyrics in the show. And guys, apparently Bennifer is back if you read some reports on Twitter.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going on. Time for one more thing before we go. Seattle Seahawks wide receiver DK Metcalf clocked 10.37 seconds in his 100-meter heat, finishing last in the nine-man field at the USA Track and Field Golden Games on Sunday. He was last among the nine sprinters in his heat, 15th of 17 overall. After the race, Metcalf acknowledged the challenge, saying, "They do this thing for a living. It's very different from football speed, as you see him there, from what I just realized." So, first of all, Ryan, you know, we thought DK Metcalf was really fast and he's going for the Olympic trials, but he even said that this is different than what I thought it would be.
Listen, there's a former LSU alum that's a lady that just ran 10-7. People that run for a living are just different. And if I'm DK Metcalf, here's what I would have done. I would have ran the 100 by myself and had myself professionally timed. And you know what? It would have been beautiful. He'd have been 6'4", 230 pounds. It would have been a 10'3". He was moving extremely fast. We would have superimposed all these other kind of people, and we would have made him look great. But now you've taken the veil off. Now we know you're just like really football person fast, not necessarily fast for a fast human. We still love it. I love the fact that he went out and competed, but there's still guys like Dante Jackson, there's guys like Henry Ruggs, there's guys like Kerry Vincent that have clocked at 10 flat before. These dudes can really run. I love what DK did. Now let's go back and play football, and instead of racing these really tiny dudes who are faster than you, let's go out and beat that guy for the Los Angeles Rams that's really fast for a football player, also really big, really mean, really vicious, and dominated DK Metcalf 3 times last year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you first watch it, it looks like he starts out pretty fast, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh man, he's actually slower than those other guys. Mina, what do you think about DK Metcalf next season for the Seahawks?
Oh, well, just really quickly, I want to defend DK's honor there. When he stands next to those other runners, it looks like Andy Reid doing punt, pass, and kick. He's like 5 times their size. So you have to factor that in. The fact that he's moving at that size is incredible. I'm glad that DK chased his dream. I'm also glad that he can focus on football as a Seahawks fan, though I don't doubt he would have been able to do both. And all he has to do is be fast enough to chase down Buda Baker, which he was. He doesn't have to be fast enough to, you know, beat Olympic all-stars in a race.
Phil, we can all agree that if we were to race each other, Mina would win, right? Out of this group here?
Absolutely.
That would be most likely, Laura. All I know more certainly is that I would lose because I can't even run 100 meters, period.
Yeah, you would lose, Field. We'll see you tomorrow.